Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello there, welcome to another Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Rich Herring, and my guest this week is the lovely and wonderful and funny Aisling B. If you enjoy these and want to see me do some comedy that has been written rather than made up completely as I go along, I make some of it up as I go along, come and see my show Happy Now on tour. It starts next week. I'm in Leicester and Sutton Coldfield in the first week of the February, but those both are sold out. Then I head to the Leicester Square Theatre on the 11th and 12th and 13th of February. Those are selling pretty well, especially the 12th and the 13th, so do book ahead if you want to come see me in London. I'll also be doing the DVD record in the Bloomsbury Theatre in May or June, can't remember now, so there's still another opportunity. Then in the next rest of the month, I'm at Sheffield on the 17th, Leeds on the 18th, Salford on the 19th, and Liverpool on the 20th. Leeds and Salford very close to selling out. Liverpool selling well. Sheffield always does well. I think there's still a few tickets left for that. And that will take us through to the end of the month. I'm doing a gig in Blackheath on the 27th, but that's not a tour show. If you want to see where the rest of the gigs that I'm doing are from March onwards, go to richardherring.com/happy_now/tour, and you can see all of the dates. As I say, mostly selling well, not Croydon and Stafford, but most of the others are selling quite well. So Norwich is nearly sold out. Do book ahead. Aldershot's nearly sold out. There's a few that are nearly sold out. Reading is sold out. And if you come and see me on that tour, then that makes me enough money so I can carry on making Leicester Square Theatre podcasts for free for the rest of the year. So thank you very much for listening. Let's sit back and enjoy Rich Tang's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Calculating. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who has just realised that Stuart Lee every week leaves his toothbrush in the dressing room. What a foolish, foolish man he is. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was playing on the Xbox the other day. I was playing Metal Gear 5. And some of the kids, the cool kids playing that on the, you know, they can talk to you on it.
They were calling her a halestopus. I don't know if that's why that's caught on. Yeah, and I do Stuart Lee's toothbrush is back in my dressing room, which is that is just a schoolboy error from Lee. And the good thing is, I'm not going to mention it, but I know he always listens to these podcasts because he loves hearing me mention him and to see what I will say next about him. And so he won't find out that I know his that's his toothbrush until about February when this goes out. And he will have been using that toothbrush. In the news the week we recorded this, it's just been International Men's Day, November the 19th, which I always enjoy. I wrote an article for The Guardian about my thing that I do where I tell people when International Men's Day is on International Men's Day because they all seem to want to know. And I got so many men on my Twitter feed telling me what an awful person I was for not respecting International Men's Day. But all of those people were horrible, sexist wankers. So it doesn't make me feel... who've said, no men aren't equal because more men commit suicide than women. So actually... Yeah, so it's men who are prejudiced against, not women. I didn't see them making a big fuss on National Suicide Awareness Week at the beginning of September, though, interestingly. So they're all fuckers, is what I'm saying. So become a woman if you are a man. That is my advice. In the news also, the BBC website reported that Winnie the Pooh's, the real Winnie the Pooh's skull, is on display in a museum, which that is going to scar... And that's how it's reported, with a real Winnie the Pooh skull in a museum. Imagine a child going to see that. They've also got Piglet's severed penis in there. It's a corkscrew. They've got Roo in a jar of formaldehyde. They've got Owl's cloaca in it. And you can go and you can just fuck it. Anyone's allowed to fuck it. They've got Christopher Robin's ashes that are just blown in your face. And I might talk to you next week about I was watching Adventures of a Taxi Driver as I got back from a gig. That's a depressing film. We may, any fans of Adventures of a Taxi Driver in? It's like Confessions of a Window Clinch from the 1970s. We'll talk about it next week. Do come back next week if you want to hear that. Anyway, my guest this week is probably best known. You probably the reason you're here is either because you know her as Amelia Warner from Holby City, or maybe as one of the panellists from the Radio Scotland quiz show Bad Language, hosted by Richard Herring, that it was probably the best. They actually went to TV, but I am not in the TV version. Let's find out if she is. It's Aisling Bea, ladies and gentlemen. It's Aisling Bea. She's eating minstrels. Welcome. I'll shake your hand. Shake you by the
hello.
Hand. Aisling Bea. Are you in the TV version of Bad Language?
No, my career is going equally badly, wow. Richard, it would appear.
It was quite bad Language.
What, are we allowed to say that?
Yeah, because we're not going to, if you're not in it.
Yeah. Oh my God, but if I get the call, it was an amazing show, which I really enjoy doing.
Yeah,
it was an odd one. We did it in Scotland, didn't we?
We did it in Glasgow.
It was actually
the week that the Stephen Fry podcast came out, because I was up there doing that, and then that sort of all... That all broke while I was in Glasgow, which was good because that meant I couldn't be interviewed about it, which I was quite pleased about. But it was poorly worked out. What about Amelia Warner in Holby City?
What were your memories of that? You're so man, Richard, to bring that up. I was going to do an episode of Holby City, and I was so excited. I thought, what am I going to get? You know, wanted to stretch my acting muscles. Maybe I'll get a cheeky little bit of cancer, some Ebola, something like that. You know, really stretch myself. And my story was an exploding boob job.
Okay.
And I was like, this old chestnut. And so I played someone who was trying to go on holiday and escape hospital, but her boob job had exploded inside.
Wow.
And I literally had to tape myself down and boof myself up in the middle of the taping. It was all very odd. But then the one director was doing one episode,
okay.
And then there was another. This one doctor was being implicated as putting in all of those exploding boob jobs. And then another director cast one of the other episodes, but kind of accidentally cast another Irish person. So when you looked at it as a whole storyline, it looked like, in particular, the boob jobs had been exploding inside Irish people alone rather than just in general exploding boob jobs, which I thought was an oddity.
Good, that was a better story than I could have dreamt of when I picked that at random from my
Can
IMDb.
I also say, the reason I have minstrels is because I've been dying for some chocolate and I found some Ferrero Rocher backstage, but we're not allowed to eat them because we think they're Stuart's as well.
We think they're Stuart Lee's.
And I love that insight to Stuart Lee, that every time before he goes on stage, he just treats himself to a tower of Ferrero Rochers. Oh, Stuart, with these Ferrero Rocher, you're really
He's just backstage recreating my routine, wishing he'd written it. That's all it is. Just dreaming of being me. That's how he spends most of his time, wiping my feces off his teeth. That is, unknowingly. Unknowingly, until now. Ashlingby, if that is your real name, I should have said, which is what I always say when it isn't your real name.
Oh, yeah. O'Sullivan's my real passport name. Yeah.
Wow.
But there's already an Aisling O'Sullivan.
That is unbelievable.
I mean, it's really not. It's like Sean Murphy. There's like 17 Sean Murphys. It's not really that unbelievable. No. There's another O'Sullivan in Ireland. Yeah, surprise. But no, I always had B in the middle, but then you're not allowed to call yourself like Judy Mary Dench. So you have to like come up with like.
Some people, it's a really. I mean, I don't think even. Talking of Stuart, he refused to change his name. There was another Stuart Lee, and he'd been working for a while as Stuart Lee and said, I'm not changing. And this was when Equity actually meant something and you couldn't work unless you were with Equity. Mm. And he refused to change his name and they let him keep it. The other one wasn't a comedian or anything. And it was from quite a long time ago. But they were so strict about it. But Stu just said, I'm not. I'm going to carry on calling myself Stuart Lee. It's my name.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I could have wangled it. Just the other Aisling O'Sullivan is still to date doing much better than me. So it'll just be really awkward if I was like, no, I'm going to stick with Harriet Walters. And that's what I'm going to stick with. So that's where that came from. So I just had to knock off hundreds of years of heritage.
Yeah.
Just do that. Just like a snip. Didn't even care.
And you've got your family's quite interesting. We'll talk about your family briefly. Your mother was a jockey, a flat.
Flat race jockey, which means she doesn't like jump over hurdles.
Right.
I love the way you're like a flat jockey, flat rather than like an IKEA jockey where you just kind of open them up.
A flat jockey would be good because they're presumably not weigh very much.
So you could just sellotape them to the horse.
Yeah.
She's a retired flat race jockey, and it's so funny. I was out last night. Oh my god, in the best place I've ever been in my life, and I don't know why I haven't discovered it. It's called Rowan's Bowling Club in Finsbury Park, and it's just does anyone know it? Oh my god, it's just like cheesy music and bowling and fights breaking out, and it's just, I was like, oh god, why haven't I discovered this heavenly place before? Drinks for £2, a glorious place. But there was an Irish girl that came up to me and goes, oh my god, are you Aisling B? And I was like, yeah it's me, chill out. But she's like, I think my mother knows you because my mother's a horse trainer. And so it wasn't anything to do with this at all, just like from the horse community we knew each other. So I kind of
was
grew
there any
horses.
Chance of you following in the family business?
No, my granddad said to me that I wouldn't make the weight at a Kerry pony contest. One time, I know, and I'm like, oh, thanks granddad. I think I'm just a bit sort of long and tall.
Yeah.
To sort of, I don't have enough respect for the horse, and they don't respect me enough, I often feel.
Okay.
I'm quite hungover, so I'm like, what does that even mean? I don't really think so. I remember one time I went to this one horse riding school, and there was a load of lads there really fancied, and we all kind of got up on the horses and raced into the fields and on the horses. But I wasn't very good, and they gave me like a really good horse because of my mother.
Yes.
But like quite a like crazy horse. And I was like, yeah, I can handle that horse, no problem. And of course the horse shot off across the field and I got thrown off, and I landed on what I thought was a giant stone, and I was completely winded, and I was like, oh no, I can't breathe. And I remember thinking, goodbye mummy, goodbye Sinead, goodbye Britney Spears and Justin, but I do hope you stay together. Bye. And then I started breathing again, and all the lads were like, yeah, she's alive. And I got up on the horse and I was like, god, I wonder what that was that I fell on. My back still feels kind of bad. And I got back to the stable, and one of the little stable lads was like, oh my god, I think you fell in a big pile of shite. And I'd fallen with such gusto onto the big pile of cow shite that it had penetrated through my clothes and jodhpurs, and it had gone like through the pores of the cloth all along my back and bottom and legs. Wow. And like I had to like angle myself into the car with my mother going, "You're not proud of me today, are you, mammy?" You know? Like, oh, jeez, Ashing, put a plastic bag down. So that's genuinely the last time I went horse riding.
That sometimes happens with babies' nappies.
That it gets all over your inside.
Yeah, it goes all up their back and everything. So that's,
yeah. I mean, I genuinely did not poo myself that day. Well, I know some people are like, "Yeah, science behind
that." It went through the pores of your clothes.
Of the cloth. Yes, it did. It went through the pores of the cloth, everyone. That's what happened.
But your grandfather, I don't know if that's the same one you mentioned, was a writer.
Yes. My grandfather, my father's side, was a poet and writer in Irish, which is a real language, everyone. It's not just an accent. So he used to write poetry, and my grand-aunt as well.
Yeah.
She was a writer of kind of young people's fiction, but all Oscailga, which means in Irish,
right.
In Gaelic, which is the language of the homosexual community as well. in Irish. Yeah.
So that's come through to you because you're a writer as well. Do you think that's...
Yeah.
I suppose
it does. I suppose maybe madness goes through...
Yeah.
It's genetic, isn't it? So probably sort of weird. But I didn't really think I grew up around too much of it.
No.
Like because I just grew up around horses all the time. And it wasn't a weird thing. That's like meeting that girl last night. It was so not weird. In the town I was from, everyone was either horsey or in the army. And so it was really like... just very normal, and then only afterwards people start, especially when you're in a foreign country, then, "Oh, you're Miss Irish, you're into horses, what, and do you sell dogs as well?" You're like, "No." people find it a bit more of a novelty than I swear. I think like when people grow up with, some people have parents who are magicians or accountants, which is so weird. maybe that's odd for them.
But in Ireland, it's still true you don't have to pay tax if you're a writer, is that?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Yeah. No, sculptors and Bono. If you're Bono or a sculptor, I think you don't have to pay tax. I mean, how cheeky is that? God, he gets away with murder. That's so cheeky. Bono doesn't pay any tax, guys.
He doesn't earn much, though.
So no, he doesn't. Yeah. Do you know who is earning loads? Still on the go. Whoa, mysterious girl, Enya.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If you're listening today, Enya, and you need one friend.
Yeah.
So Enya lives in a castle in Ireland, genuinely on her own. And like a gym instructor comes around to her castle all the time to help her work out. And she has a studio in there, and she comes up with her haunting sounds, probably from like the sounds she makes at night when she's walking around on her own. And like her last album sold 16 million around the world. Like U2 hasn't sold an album that sold 16 million. And no. She just records it all from her house. Can you imagine if we could do gigs like that? Just, I mean, this is kind
from
of
my
a version
castle.
Of that.
Yeah. Nice to be in. Well, that's my ultimate aim, is just to play snook against myself in a castle. And let people can listen to that.
The podcasts are the start, and then you start inviting the audience to your house. Then they just listen in.
I once had to have sex whilst listening to Enya. I mean, on a record.
Hate the story already, Richard. I hate the story already.
Well, I couldn't. It's very. It was Sail Away, which is the only
U-turn
one.
U-turn and podcast.
It's quite U-turn. It's quite a difficult song to have sex to. I think. Well, for me,
sail
no,
away, if sail you wanna, away, sail away from this subject sort of matter. Like, sort of, I don't want to listen to it. Oh my God.
That's what I had to do. You know, that's not. I like something with a bit more of a beat to it.
God. Thank God
the audience at home
cannot see what you just did to insinuate sex, which
some
looked like
can.
You were, I don't know, shoving
beat,
something into a slot machine that doesn't fit. Oh,
that's
God. I wonder if you only had one baby. My God. Grim. Anyways, moving on.
It's not. Don't ever put it
have
on,
girl. Have sex to Enya.
Don't ever have sex to Enya. Or with Enya. Imagine if you're having sex with Enya and she starts singing.
Yeah.
It might remind me of the time I had sex with that other girl, though, and then that might be kind of sexy. It's a sort of threesome.
Yeah.
No. It's a threesome through time. I've got overexcited.
Is it like a Pavlov dog now every time you hear Enya?
Yeah.
It perks you up just a little bit.
I wish. I wish I had something that works that well.
Oh.
Three weeks
again,
of winding
Richard.
Up.
I feel like this is too much information.
You studied philosophy at Trinity College Dublin.
Yeah.
What is the meaning of life?
Duh! It is. No, I've no. I don't even have a witty answer. You think in 4 years I would have come up with something witty? I really felt like when I did philosophy, that I was just going to be so, like, I imagined myself floating into the room and them going, I'm here to teach you something. And I go, no, I'm here to teach you something, guys. Like, who is this girl? She's so mysterious. Like Enya. But I actually, like, most of my questions, I put up my hand and they'd be like, yes, Aisling, down the back. Hiya, could you roll that down again? I didn't write it quick enough. My hand's not going too fast today. I found it a little bit, there was a lot more reading than I thought there'd be. Yeah, and a lot less sitting around with a group of hippies smoking pot. Like, I thought, but it was really just kind of handing in an essay.
Because a lot of the philosophers are dead.
That's a classic philosopher thing to do.
They can't come in. I mean, I think, therefore, I am, because they're not thinking anymore.
They're dead, they're are they? See, guys, that level of depth. I remember, though, what was great about the philosophy department, because I did French and philosophy, and it was just around the time of, you know, like turnitin.com, which is this thing. Hey, what, did you invent it or have you just used it? Because it's a pretty boring thing to whoop.
Welcome to my audience.
I've turned in so many essays with that. But, you know, when that came out, it stopped people from plagiarizing. So you'd... In theory, oh really? All right, Julian Assange. Only in theory. Interesting. Well, we were all duped, but like you had to hand in your essays through this thing. Richard's now filming his face.
Got him. Get that guy on film.
Just another academic being jailed because of a podcast. But yeah, you had to like turn in your essays and anything, even if you'd copied or pasted a word from something else, it would do a big old, you've lied, you've cheated thing. But it would be years before the philosophy department even like cottoned onto that. They were kind of in this north tower of Trinity College in Dublin with a crow landing, giving them kind of like, news from abroad, you know, just very dusty place. And so I would just, and like very few people were into computers up there, and I'd, you know, I'd just gotten like Windows kind of on the go. It was the days of Bebo. It was pretty crazy times. And I would copy and paste to my heart's desire. I mean, they can't take me, if they listen to this, they can't take the degree back off me, can they?
Don't think so.
Grant, I copied and pasted.
We'll like, pretend I remember, it was a joke.
Yeah. Except no one's laughing. No. You really have to laugh during this bit or else I'll have to get my degree, give my 2-2 back. Oh no. But like I remember one time I had to do a dialogue between Nietzsche and Schopenhauer, and I was just like being too busy being sassy around campus to like go and read the books. So like I went online and I literally went, well, Nietzsche, paste. I don't know about that, Schopenhauer, paste. And that was the essay. And I remember getting like 67 for it and me being delighted. And I'd never been taught how to do a bibliography, and I just like roughly remembered what the names of the books were, and I was like, you know, Nietzsche, Good and Bad and Evil, Schopenhauer, three of his books, and I just got again a big red circle around going, this book does not exist. And I thought that was like a really nice philosophical way of saying, you know, do your bibliography better. But I still got 67.
Wow.
So I was like, I'm never going to change my cheating ways.
I copied pretty much every essay I did at university because we had like a tutorial system, and someone went in the, I don't know how I got away with this because I never wrote an essay. Yeah. But if someone else had done it the week before, I'd say, can I have your essay? And then I couldn't copy and paste it because we didn't have computers.
Yeah.
So I just had to copy it out by hand or type it out. And then I'd read out the exact essay that I hadn't really even read myself to the tutor who'd heard it the week before. And if he asked me any questions, we just had to really just go, yeah, that's an interesting point. He either didn't know or didn't care. I'm presuming didn't care.
Isn't that the terrible thing about a bit of charm and ballsiness that you can just sort of cheat your way into things? Yeah. I mean, we are essentially just cheaters in many ways.
I think so. Well, because I just wanted to do comedy and acting once I got there, once I got going. And I was so relieved to get through the first term because I had exams at the end of the first term and thought I'd be kicked out.
Yeah.
So then I just generally for 2.5 years, I didn't really write anything. I think you must have known, and they just didn't. They don't care, do they?
Yeah, that's awful that they didn't care as well. It's kind of worse that they looked at you and thought, I mean, poor fecker. Let's just leave him be.
Anyway, so my degree might get taken off me, but I have never gone to collect my degree either.
Did you know?
I'm a graduand.
A graduand? What's
a graduand? Yeah, that means I've completed a degree but not collected it.
Is that genuinely an official term?
That is what it's called, yeah. I put it in my Wikipedia page. I said I'm the most famous graduand in Britain. But they took it off because it needed a citation, or I said one of the most famous graduands.
What an odd thing that you have to go and collect it for it to be relevant. Yeah. Like, and now you're clever. Like, as soon as you... How odd.
Yeah, I have no respect for it, so I won't go and get it.
You could leave it room with Stuart Lee's toothbrush in there and just wipe your arse in it as well.
I could, yeah, that'd be good. I never thought of that. I could use it as toilet paper. Could I go and collect my degree and use it as toilet paper?
Finally, you're a graduate. I feel like we wandered into the abyss and lost the audience here, guys, I'll be honest.
People seem appalled by me.
This is what four years of philosophy
does. He didn't do any work, he copied all his essays, and then he didn't even go and collect the degree that he doesn't deserve. So you did do, you started out as an actor who has become a stand-up comedian and an actor, I mean, and a writer, so you do everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you sort of, you went to Lambda, was it?
To drama school.
Yeah.
Where I learned all of nothing. That was interesting. I went to drama school for 2 years and I'd been doing kind of like lots of comedy while I was at university and sketch groups and stuff like that. But then I got my heart broken. I was like, I'm going to go to drama school and just never do comedy again, only do monologues about like dead families and stuff like that. Yeah. I genuinely thought, I'd bleached blonde hair at the time, and I genuinely thought I'd waltz out of drama school and like go straight into the National being like, no, my family! Family, like playing old men, like all the parts I wanted to play were like the really old men. Like I was like, oh, bet I'll get a Hamlet quite quickly out of this, and had no idea that I'd end up in Holby with an exploded boob job instead. It's like, oh, expectations, why have them? So I think it's an old-fashioned version of performance. Really, is to try and do as many things as you can.
Yeah.
And it kind of keeps your brain ticking along. If you're
but I think a lot of people who see themselves as actors are scared of doing stand-up comedy, or think, I think I was talking to Phil Jupers about all the actors will go, oh, I can't believe how you can do stand-up comedy. That's the hardest thing in the world. But you obviously just sort of thought, I'll have a crack at it and...
Well, I think it's just different types of personalities. Yeah. Like, I think there is always someone in your office who could do more than one job, but they like one. And then, like, I think with a lot of actors, why they do it is they love becoming other people and reading a text and taking someone else's words exactly how they are and reading them out exactly how they are. Like, I'm quite bad with ad-libbing. Whenever someone gives me, I'm like, oh, that's nice. Now I'll get the idea of it and go. which is really hard when you're doing a Shakespeare. And you're like, oh, what an amazing first draft you did. But now it's hammer time. I've got a spin on this that's going to blow your minds. I think for a lot of it, it's just different parts of your personality. And like some people love doing musical theatre. I don't particularly enjoy that.
No.
But it's just another facet to you. Like you do acting as well, do you?
Well, I do a little bit. I rarely get asked, so I do when I
do. Do you like becoming other people when you do it?
No.
Are you acting?
No. I'm just literally trying to remember what the words are and facing the right. I mean, when I've done like proper acting, I felt I really, you sort of respect what, when you really get into a part.
That's, do you feel you've been maybe a stand-up for so long that the idea of allowing yourself to become someone else, it's more fear in your brain, the same way maybe an actor is starting stand-up, it's a fear of allowing themselves that they can or can't do
it? I think probably when I started out, I was more of an actor than a stand-up as well. You know, I did like sketches. And I kind of felt more comfortable doing stuff with other people. It took a long time for me to get into doing stand-up on my own. So yeah, it is sort of difficult. I mean, I think it's overcoming the self-consciousness and, you know, that which I find very difficult in life generally. And then and literally being that other person, which you sort of.
Whereas I love it. I love it can sometimes be the best job in the world, because sometimes you look at yourself in the mirror and you're like, oh my God, I have to be you until I'm dead. Like I can only just be you. Like, and even if I liked myself, God, I'm still stuck with you. Like one day it'd be so nice to just quantum leap your life and just be like, oh, finally, I'm a middle-aged boxer in 1920s America. Oh, thank God, because I was so bored of being an Irish woman in London. Like, imagine just being allowed to be someone else. And so what was really nice when I was just acting was I probably was asked to do a lot more things that were maybe different to me. Now I get asked to do a lot of stuff where they're like, so you're going to love this acting part. She's a sort of Irish woman around the age of 30 whose life isn't going crazily well. She's got a bit of a drink problem. I'm like, I mean, I don't know. Could I do it in a Liverpool accent? So I think the idea of transformation is lovely. That part of it's really nice. And that's why stand-up I found not quite difficult, but more getting my head around the idea of just allow. Like, that was my challenge. I refused to come and do any character. I could have started out doing characters.
Yeah, which instead, again, I think a lot of actors take
yeah,
that.
Yeah, 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 because it's an easier jump, I think, for people. And also you've got an armour there for when things go wrong. You're like, oh, they didn't like Maisie the sheep shearer. See, I could have done characters, guys, just like that. Came up with a great one. That they didn't like her, not me. Yeah. Whereas with stand-up, there's no armour there. It's another version of you, but it's not people often say, oh, it's like it's a character you portray on stage. It's not. It's a facet of you, the same way you'd have a facet to your kids and in your work life and different things.
But, I mean, you've done crazily well as stand-up, given you mean how you've been doing it for 5 or 6 years, something
four
like that?
Five years maybe. Four and a half.
So you were very successful very quickly, which is...
Yeah, I mean, success is an interesting... I think people now that they... You're on telly, you're a success. But actually for me, what success is maybe is getting like a respect for your own work and really having like I think some people, like some people I know who do well or have been in it longer than me or less time than me, have a very fixed idea of what success is, which is very much someone sitting on a couch watching TV version of success. You do that, that means success. And I've never thought like that. Never thought, oh, I've done that, I must have made it out to the nightclubs to get free drinks. For me, success is like having faith in what you do and having maybe the respect of your peers more than anything.
Sure.
So I think I felt a little bit guilty at the start getting telly jobs and stuff because I was like, oh no, maybe people feel I'm taking away a job from them. But they're mostly white men, so like, I'll give a fuck. But I'm joking. Happy International Men's Day. Sorry, I never even mentioned it when I saw you. Men's Christmas, which is Christmas. But yeah, so I think I'm just slowly getting used to that now. And yeah. I think with any job that you do, the key is not getting the one job, it's getting asked back. And so the more you get asked back to do a similar job and again and again and again, that's when you're like, yes, this is success. Yeah. That I can building relationships and people want to work with you. That for me is success. And you can kind of count on that and you're not going to lose that in a day.
No.
Getting on TV once or twice, you're like, someone might want to see you today, but they might want to next month. So
yeah,
that's how you build it. I mean, I know I should stop speaking when you look at your book, sadly, in sort of reverie.
So I thought I'd made it and then...
Yeah.
Just have to make my own TV
loads
shows.
Of people, loads of people think you're really good still.
Yeah.
Got your baby. She looks up to you.
My baby really thinks I'm funny, but she thinks like a brick wall is funny as well.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So it's, you know, it's not.
That was one of your Chortle reviews, isn't it? I'm totally joking. Everyone loves Richard Herring.
I'll ask you an emergency question to get out of my own embarrassment.
Oh, Richard.
I'm not a Samini, I'm only pretending. Yeah. I'm very, very...
Good acting.
Thank you. I inhabited the character of a loser somehow. Somehow got in there. I'm extremely successful, really. What shall I ask you? I think I will ask you this question. I haven't decided yet. I'll ask you this because this is a new one. What is the most deluded thing you thought as a child about yourself? I thought that I would be so successful that I was worried that time travellers from the future would come back and watch me doing mundane things. So if I was picking my nose or wanking or whatever, I was worried that like people from the future would go, oh, that's a bit just... the future saviour of the world. And
oh, my God.
So that's quite deluded.
So
not that I just thought I was going to be an historical figure, that the people from the future would be watch space tourists. And I mean, they wouldn't be appearing. They'd just be what... I imagine time travel would happen, that they would just be able to watch, like, on a TV screen, which I think could happen. They could be watching this now.
No.
I mean, they could just look at the YouTube as well.
Do you think maybe like there'll be a giant apocalypse and all that would be left will be a load of podcasts?
Yeah.
Well, so like the Richard Herring podcast will be one of the main sources of life used to be.
You never know. I mean, I always often think about things like if some very mundane piece of work of art survived and nothing else. Because you think about like the ancient Greece stuff, a lot of that stuff survives because there was lots of copies of it, so it was probably quite good.
Yeah.
But there's every chance it's just some rubbish old bit of tat, isn't it?
Yeah.
That just... I was at the British Museum and they've got this exhibition about Egypt, but so much stuff survives because Egypt is dry, so nothing decays. So you've got all these, you know, there's like a party invite from the 4th century to...
Really?
Yeah, to come to have dinner at some temple or something. You know, it's all
like going maybe decline.
Yeah, exactly. But that's kind of crazy.
And they're all like little Egyptian figures going decline.
It's crazy to think that would, you know, there was the announcement of someone's birth of their daughter survives like 1600 years or whatever. So that could be what happened.
And you
so,
can yeah, imagine hello, that person being really like, maybe like a non-end. Like I often wonder about that with the people of Pompeii. Like they might have just, you know, they're now historical figures. Yeah. But can you imagine, like, I often think how embarrassing if you were like, I don't know, having a Tommy Tank or yeah. just like sat in the loo and then all this like lava came over and you're yeah. like, oh no, this will always be how I'll be remembered. I'll be known for all of my tax work.
You'd have to be pretty committed to the wank to stay.
You'd be like, oh well, when in Rome.
But there are I'm obsessed with Pompeii. But there are, you know, that most people are.
I'd love to go.
There was a brilliant exhibition at the British Museum again. You should go to the British Museum. But then they're much more terrifying. But actually, weirdly, as I left that exhibition, there were like loads of these the plaster cast statues, so they can fill in, as you may know, the gaps where organic material or people were in the ash that disappears, and then they fill it with plaster of Paris, and you essentially get a statue of people in their last moments, which were no one on their toilet or wanking, because they were awful, so they're like parents kind of shielding their children.
Yeah.
And like, you know, people just cowering down as obviously and then as I was walking through there was quite a big looking statue and just sullen looking. So then I realised that was just an American tourist sitting down. Genuinely, it was sort of just sitting there. And so that's how realistic it was. But it's fascinating. So you weren't.
Did you have any delusions as a child? I mean, I was brought up in quite a Catholic. So that was all a lot of delusional ideas, really, I suppose, when you think about it. I do think back, like, all the things. Like, I remember one time we all had to stand, like, there were loads of bold, or, like, when we say bold in Ireland, we mean naughty. But, like, I often find saying the word naughty, it sounds really like the vicar has a whip, you know, naughty. Yeah, it just sounds very naughty. So I'll say bold. But, like, any time there was a child who was bold in the class, I had to go and stand in the corner. And one day in our class, they just ran out of corners because we were all off our head on sweets. So we all had to stand along walls till there was only really, like, four kids sat down. And I remember all I'd been doing was talking to myself. Like, that's how I got in trouble.
Yeah.
And I just gone, oh, God, there's my flask. Aisling, are you talking? No, just to myself, miss. And she put me in a corner.
Wow.
And I remember sitting there rubbing this little miraculous medal of the Virgin Mary, hoping that she would take me to heaven with her so I wouldn't have to stand in the corner not looking at anything so long. Aww. And, like, loads of those moments where you think we were so invested in religion as kids. Like, we just genuinely believed in the magic of it.
Yeah. I think both those stories, yours and mine, are the same thing because you are sort of taught as a child that there's someone watching over you.
Yeah.
So that you won't misbehave, but also for safety reasons. So obviously it's like if you're going, even though I'm not here, if you're doing something naughty, Santa Claus or God or whatever.
Or God, there's always
some time travellers from the future. We'll be able to see what you're doing and we'll judge you.
Do you think maybe all of the things that exist in religion were just made by tired parents who just wanted one Sunday without like, meh, 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 meh. Oh, Jesus is watching you. Who's Jesus? He was a man who, sit down now and I'll tell you. He was the son of this other big man who's going to get you. Like, maybe it was just a load of, like, fairy tales.
I think it is. If you think about it, if it's there to protect children, that makes sense. And then it's just crazy that any adults carry on believing. I mean, I think we need
just as many crazy stories to protect us. I think that's why religion exists. Because imagine if we're just on our own, guys. Imagine if we are. I mean, I know we are, but I really can't accept it. I mean, that'd be so scary. Like, you know, so I think we sometimes need the idea. And thrilling. You know, they say actually atheists are the most good-natured people, that because there's nothing to blame but yourself if you did something. Like, there was no kind of like, oh, the priests made me do it.
Yeah. Well, it's weird to do something in the hope of an eternal reward.
Yeah.
You know? So if you're doing something nice for someone else, and you're thinking, joke's on you, mate, because I get to go to heaven forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of weird. So if you do something nice, genuinely nice for someone, I guess, but doing something nice for other people, even if you don't believe in God, it will has good repercussions on yourself, just in feeling good, but also hopefully makes more people behave well. And
I do believe in karma,
nicer place.
But I don't know. I do feel like, what's your, sir, the academic over there? Are you like, have you a sciencey background? He
works in IT.
Do you work in IT? That's science. I mean, that was a bit snobby of you.
Science-y background.
What a surprise.
Do you feel like in a couple of years' time, like, you know, the karma, like, there'll be a scientific explanation for karma?
I don't believe in karma, sorry.
Oh, well, I do, sir, and you are going to get sassed someday right back when you need a friend to back you up, and they won't be there because of this. Oh, you have a friend in Jesus instead? Oh, okay, that's good. Oh, no, not at all. My God, I honestly do. Sometimes I do believe, like, I wished in Jesus. I believe in Jesus. It's so nice to have something to hang on to. But
he's
I do,
taken
I
off
believe
his clothes
in,
now.
Oh, my God. Are you going to show us your big JC tattoo or something? But I do believe in karma, but I feel like it sounds like a hippy-dippy idea now of, like, putting stuff back out and the energy you get from people and by helping someone in your family. But I feel like it's something we will explain with a bit of science why humans should be nice to each other.
I think it works as a rule of thumb, but I don't think it works, like, on an individual basis, because plenty of people do nice things and then something terrible happens to them.
Yeah, but I wonder, we see terrible as a sort of, like, small moment in time. And you think, oh God, this tiny thing has happened to me. And sometimes you don't put into perspective all of the possibilities of terrible things that could have and that don't. I don't know. Hey man, this is just like university, or what I thought university was going to be.
2-2 she got. So that is 2-2.
That was a 2-2 bit of chat banter there, if I'm honest. I give that banter a 2-2 or a lower third.
I'm quite obsessed with time travel, as you'll discover. Kettle crisps or chips, if you're David Mitchell and insist on them being called what they're called, are not as nice as they once were. Have I changed or have they? Don't answer that question. If you could travel back in time to compare any food of today with an equivalent in the past, what time would you travel to, and what would the food be that you would try eating?
Try eating? Ooh.
Well, yeah, because I want to go back and try and see if kettle crisps, as I call them, are the same as they were.
When they were actually made in kettles?
Well, no, just when I first ate them. I think I've become more sophisticated.
Oh,
but I want
I
to
see.
Find out. But, you know, there might be a food that you'd like to taste from the past, that, see what it tastes like in the past.
Yeah, I'd like to go back to maybe to see what food was like before we had additives and all the sugars and stuff like that. And, like, whenever, I don't know, when were things like MSG, when were those things invented? Jesus' friend?
It's
E621. Yeah. 60s, so around then. Right,
they knew everything. That was amazing. Shame he's not on the mic or anything. I don't know how clever he is. 1960s. Yeah,
so
but,
around then.
So like bacon used to be really nice and now it's not.
But I think we ruin our taste buds a lot by all the stuff we put on.
No, they just pump it full of water. So in the old days, like meat and, you know, even
but they
plump
it with water, but replaced flavourings with things that don't actually exist. So you can mimic flavourings because you can get, like, roast chicken crisps.
Oh, definitely, yeah, that's, you know, that's...
Yeah, so I'd like to go back to see what food was like when it was just simpler and how people ate maybe then.
Yeah.
Because I feel like there's a lot of, like, conspiracy in the food industry, guys, and what we're being sold and what's being put into our food. Mm. And, yeah, I could go on with this at length and I feel like it would be really alienating. So
you should.
But you should all watch Cowspiracy and we're all going to die.
Well, I was talking about Winnie the Pooh's skull being in a museum. What fictional childhood character's skull would you like to see in a museum?
Good question. Jimmy Savile's skull. I think we could all give a
I'm not
that
sure
a kick.
He was fictional, I think.
Yeah, that's true. Well, technically he was. The version from the 70s and 80s was very fictional. Thank you. I just got heckled by philosophy. Thanks.
He got buried in concrete, didn't he? So that he's in a block of... It was quite hard to get to his skull, but his skull is still extant.
God, I thought you meant Winnie the Pooh still.
But he's...
I was like, what?
But I think he got buried in... I mean, A, he was looking... He was buried standing up.
Jimmy Savile was.
So he could look over the bay where he was buried. He had a massive headstone with all the charitable stuff that he did on it that has been broken for some reason. But I believe, I may be wrong, anyone else heard this, that he was encased in, his coffin was encased in concrete, which I presume was to stop it being dug up and desecrated, ironically. So... what's good for the goose is certainly good for the gander. So there you go. So his skull's still there, is what I'm saying. So we
I didn't have really English TV growing up, so there's lots of characters that I wouldn't.
This podcast goes all over the world. I was doing a gig at the Albert Hall the other day. The Elgar rooms. And there was a guy sitting in the front row on his own, and I said, "Oh, you know," he said, "Oh, I'm a fan of yours." And I said, "He said he worked in software." And I said, "Oh, you're probably a fan of mine." He said, "Yes, I am."
Yeah.
And I said, "What software have you engineered this week?" He said, "Oh, I haven't done anything. I've been on holiday. I live in India. I've come from India to see me." That's what he.
Oh my god.
That's what he joked about. I think. I hope.
Yeah.
Are you? You're not in again, are you? He is. There he is. There he is.
Hello,
so,
sir.
There you go. Well, you can't really see him because it's too far back. Remind me of your name.
Jijin.
Yeah. We can talk about Irish stuff because there'll be some Irish people at home. It's going to bore everyone here.
Well, actually, my sister's boyfriend is Indian. Well, British Indian. Okay. And she's going out to Kerala. I mean, I know I'm like saying... Are you from Kerala? Yeah. That is a very Irish thing to happen because India, as far as Google tell me, is quite big. So for you to be from the exact same place, that is ridiculous.
So to be honest, if he can listen to this podcast and get anything out of it, the stuff that I talk about, which is mainly, you know, Quantum Leap and... they probably have that in India. There's mainly, you know, 90s spitting image puppets and stuff. That must be confusing.
Yeah.
So he enjoys it on a surreal level, I'm guessing. I mean, I don't want to speak for you, but I'm guessing that's... Did you enjoy the Albert Hall gig?
Yeah.
Oh, good. We were at Albert Hall, and this was recorded the week after the Paris terrorist atrocity. And in the main room, they had, like, patriotic songs, like British flag-waving stuff. And they said, we'd better just warn you before we go on that there is... in the middle of the show, there's some cannons are going to go off, which is good they warned us because it went on for about 5 minutes and the building shook as the cannons went off. So if they hadn't told us that, we go, oh, God, it's happened.
But my childhood skull that I would like to win is Bosco. Big shout out to all the... Yay! There we go. Where are those people in from?
Dublin,
there you go. Yeah. Bosco, best guy I ever knew. Bosco was this tiny, really badly made hand puppet that was like crack to Irish children during the 80s and early 90s. Like, oh my God. But like it was... the magic door! Knock, knock, open wide, see what's in the other side. Knock, knock, forevermore. What then is it? Go on through the magic door. You see, lyrics like that, spinning.
I'd really love it if you just made this up and you just colluded to improvise. Let's improvise a whole new character. We'll do songs.
Secretly from the Irish tourist boards going, go and plant some charm around England because no one's coming anymore.
And what would his skull look? Is it a boy? Was it a boy or an animal of some kind?
Well, we do not know if he or she was a boy or a girl because we never really find out. He had this high pitch. He/she had this high pitch, which I thought was very modern. Have a he/she puppet to children of that age, but he/she had like a high-pitched voice and red hair and little red rosy cheeks, and he lived inside a little box, and everyone had dungarees around him who talked to him, and he'd always do like a big adventure day, and it was always to Dublin Zoo. Like, they never went anywhere else but Dublin Zoo, and as children were like, oh my God, where's he going to go next? Dublin Zoo again. And we should have cottoned on eventually. They could clearly only get rights, the TV company, to go to Dublin Zoo, but we were, oh my God, we love Bosco so much.
Yeah.
And it really, like, everyone, I think, of particularly my age group, gets a real kind of, like, buzz from remembering Bosco. Like, it's a real just fondness.
It did very well with the Irish people.
With the two people in the audience who know who I'm talking about there, yeah. Bloody love Bosco. So, I'd like to see Bosco's skull at the British Museum.
Yeah.
And there will be a queue of one person there waiting to see it.
There's some great stuff at the British Museum. I really love it there. You can look, if you go up to the cafe that's above on the spiral staircase in the middle, you can look into the old reading rooms where Karl Marx wrote Das Kapital. And I wrote the Macmillan Encyclopedia of the Royal Family in the early 1990s, although they don't talk about that as much.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say that there's so many things in the British Museum. You should go up to the cafe. It's a lovely bun in the cafe.
It's the posh cafe up there. They do like afternoon tea.
Oh.
Yeah.
What's your favourite bit of the British Museum?
I like the stuff from the Anglo-Saxon. What's the guy? What's the oh God, my brain's just gone.
We'll ask our friends over here.
Well, you know, I've got 2-1 in history. You know, Sutton Hoo. That's what the Sutton Hoo stuff. All the Sutton Hoo Viking helmet and.
I don't know who's Sutton. What's Sutton?
Well, it's like a basically a Viking burial from the something century. And I should know more about it. And it's near Ipswich, but they found like a very nearly complete helmet and lots of other stuff. And I like uh-oh. Yeah, good. That, I'm laughing because I said
down
helmet there
with a giant pint of white wine.
Giant helmet. I love wine.
And I like the bog body, Pete Marsh, who was he's all crumpled. I went to see him on my 40th birthday. I went into the British Museum. That was my treat.
Wow.
To look at a crumpled old
now
bog body.
Now it makes sense that you once had sex tenure.
Yeah.
Now it makes sense.
It's very good. This is sponsored by the British Museum, this particular episode. So you've done lots of... You're doing lots of sitcoms. Mm-hmm. And you were in... was the first one when you were in Dead Boss?
No, I've been in, like, loads of things that never made it to television. Right. To the point where I'm like, maybe I'm the problem. Maybe I'm the problem. Yeah, so I've done, like... I've been in loads of things that never made it to air or aired... vaguely. Dead Boss was one which I really believed in, and I was like really sad that it didn't go ahead for a second series. That was Sharon Horgan and Holly Walsh had this kind of, and it was pre-Orange is the New Black,
yeah,
like all set in a women's prison, and there were so many great people in it, like Susan Kalman, Jennifer Saunders was in it, Anna Crilly, Lizzie Roper, just loads of brilliant people, but they just didn't kind of recommission the second series, which was pretty. But that's where I met Sharon Horgan when we were doing the pilot for that, and so now we're writing a TV show together.
What's that about?
That's about, flicks through notes, what have we decided to tell them we're writing about? It'll be set in Ireland, and it's about kind of a girl who comes back to discover her long-lost father. So that's kind of the basics.
Okay. Are you playing sisters? Because you and her should play sisters if you're not
We did
sisters.
In Dead Boss, yeah. Because we look, but we'd get, even the editors would get kind of confused between the two of us. But I like it better than she does, because obviously I like getting in some of her glory. Like, loved you in Catastrophe. I'm like, oh, thanks. but hopefully we will be in that as well. But I remember she went on this show, show called The Late Late Show, to promote it when it was out in Ireland, and my mother was like, oh my god, they showed so many clips of you, Aisling. I was so proud to see my daughter on The Late Late Show, and clips of her, and I look back and they literally didn't show one clip of me. It was all Sharon. And mammy, my own mother, thought it was me.
She might have been on a horse when she was watching it.
She was watching it quite flippity. She always has a horse in the sitting room.
And you're working with Adam Buxton on Graham Linehan? Happening?
Maybe. We'll see by the new year. We don't know yet really how, because that's all changed since the pilot. I did the pilot of their show though, and that was really lovely working with them. So we'll see how it, what characters come out in the wash, because they have to rewrite the whole series.
Right. Do you think you might not make it into the...
I don't know. I tend to, like, genuinely, I tend to ruin things. So I think for their own health and safety, they should definitely take me out of it.
And what's the is the premise that says set in a space station or something?
Yeah, I think it's kind of like an IT crowd in space, that one.
Right.
So that's Adam and Graham writing that together. And Adam's definitely going to be in it. I don't know about myself yet.
It'd be good if it was literally just the IT crowd in space, just... the characters
just
floating
Chris O'Dowd
and dead.
Is going, oh, this is something different, I suppose.
That wouldn't be good. That would be bad. Have a minstrel.
Thank you.
Do you think they should rename minstrels? It's in the spirit of political correctness
forward,
gone correct.
I don't know. We'd have to ask some real minstrels, I suppose, how they feel, you know. The people who'd be affected by it most.
I suppose it'd be worse if they were white on the inside.
Yeah. I feel as two white people who've never really come up against adversity sitting here doing this podcast, we should probably shut this convo down.
That's the kind of thing that I
edit out.
I keep going with. Oh. I push further. I'll go to an emergency question. I think it was sensitively handled, the idea of the minstrel there via chocolate. If you were the Prime Minister, would you use nuclear weapons?
No, absolutely not. I would rather die on behalf of not using nuclear weapons than try and poke the bear, as it were.
But then what if people would fire nuclear weapons at you and they know that you won't use them?
Yeah, I'd die for that cause.
Well, you would. Where are the rest of us?
Take you all with me, guys. I'm taking you all with me. I'll be honest. I think it's about time someone stepped up and said, I'm not going to fight no matter what happens. We may all get killed because of it, but unless one of the big guys says no more, you can bet your bottom dollar that the evil guys are not going to stop.
No.
So someone has to eventually stop rather than... Like, why would you go in to a peace talk with a gun? It just doesn't make any sense. So it's sometimes someone's got to kind of go, I came in here with no knife, no gun, just my word and a trust and faith in this situation. And that'll make the baddie go, oh, well then, maybe I will also put down my gun and then we can all get along. Yeah, that's my psychology for you.
You're
there,
worried
guys.
About the minstrel things, but your impression of a baddie was, I would say, racially insensitive.
I feel Russian is a totally safe one to go with. Can I just say that was Russian?
Was that what you were going for?
That was Russian. Yeah. Can I just say that was definitely Russian? And I feel that's a totally safe baddie to name. Like, if the Bonds can do it, fill them in, fill them out. You know, I think we can get away with it.
I do a section called Desert Island Dicks.
Do you, Richard?
Yeah, it's not what you think. I'm classier than you and that lady, that helmet lady.
Yeah. Oh, she's not happy. She's going to have another one and then really go for you.
If you were going to a desert... if you were...
See, it is your voice now.
It's all right. It's all about you today. Which eight Richards would you take with you to a desert island if you were stranded on a desert island and could take eight Richards?
Eight Richards?
I come as a standard. I'm there already.
Oh, you're there already,
yeah,
so I can't pick you.
I'm a luxury Richard. Oh. Yeah, I'm there whether you want me or not.
You're a luxury.
But there will
dick.
Be eight other Richards. And which eight Richards would they be? I want you to think about
so
it carefully.
So I already have my favourite Richard yes. Herring there.
Yeah, that's true.
Richard Branson, because I feel like he'd be able to turn like a coconut into like a nifty, I don't know, bra if you needed one or something like that.
He could probably do that, yeah.
Yeah, he'd just do something clever with like the island that would make it sort of more easy to live in. Richard, I wish you'd like told me this question was coming up so I could have a proper think about it, because now I'm just going to name Richards.
Well, that's part of the joy of this question. It gets quite embarrassing quite quickly because it's quite hard to think of eight Richards off the...
I mean, is that embarrassing? I don't think I'd feel embarrassed by that. Like, no. Oh God, I'm so embarrassed. I couldn't name eight Richards.
It's awkward. I mean, maybe really awkward. Maybe there's red-faced. Just an awkwardness to it.
Richard, okay, shout some out and I'll see
no,
if
that,
I...
No, they're not allowed to help.
What, go on? Richard Dawkins. Would I bring... Oh, I just... Actually, do you know what? I'd rather have less people than someone who's always just going to be up in my grill, being like, oh, do you really think that? Richard, we're on an island now. Someone has to believe in the ghosts. Just for a bit of entertainment. Once upon a time, there was an old fairy castle. Ah, beep, wouldn't have happened. Oh, God, Richard. So I think I'd leave off Dawkins.
Yeah.
Any other Richards? Richard Madeley. Yeah, do you know I would bring him? He could recommend a few good books. He's kind of flirty, but loyal, I feel. I feel like, you know... Yeah, I think I would bring him.
Okay.
Would he come with Judy?
No, there will be no one who wasn't called Richard apart from you on the island.
Oh, I'm fond of Judy. I think he'd have some nice anecdotes about Judy, so I'd bring that Richard. Any other Richards there might be?
Rogers.
Burton. Richard. Well, Jesus, there's loads of them now.
It's easy when you get the audience to help.
Yeah. Richard Bacon.
Richard Bacon, who's a future guest on the...
Who's Richard Bacon again?
Wow. Well, that's, to be honest, how the ticket-buying public are feeling.
He's
the ex-Blue Peter presenter.
We didn't have Blue Peter growing up. I only had two Irish channels.
Is on the radio a lot and TV a lot. He may have had a drug at once. It's something we'll find out during my podcast. I'm going to quiz him quite heavily about that.
He sounds perfect for... the island then.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it'll be a bit like, you know, and then he'll also have like a couple of like skills from his Blue Peter days.
You're right.
So he's going in the pot. Then there was another Richard Whiteley. Is he the Dead Countdown presenter? He can definitely
you
come.
You have his skull. Just
yeah,
his,
just his skull. And every now I go doodly-doop bong to his skull. So he can come.
It was sad when Richard Whiteley died. And it was like one of those moments. I found out Richard Whiteley died because I was in a shop on the Uxbridge Road in Shepherd's Bush. And a man turned to me who I didn't know and said, Richard Whiteley's died. It was like Diana.
Oh.
It was just like strangers were turning to each other, just going, don't believe it, Richard Whiteley's died.
Oh, God, it's just how many people watch afternoon television.
It does.
Yeah. Oh. I played Countdown a couple of times.
Did you?
Yeah, I did like 8 out of 10 Cats does Countdown.
Yeah.
And I honestly, because I'd only seen it a couple of times, but I knew I was going to be naturally brilliant at the game. Like, I just knew. I was like, I'm not a big mathy person. I never do anagrams. But this is going to be like that moment where just your natural skill kicks in. And I knew I'd look at the words and they'd all just naturally come together. And I'd be like, fibula. The word I've come up with is fibula from those letters. And I was just like, there. I've got the again. I've got an. Do I get high points for an? I was so bad at it. Like, really, like, I'd never been to school bad. It was so embarrassing. And 30 seconds is so little time as well. I think any of us could do it in 45 seconds.
Yeah,
but the first 15 are pure panic. And then the second 15 are remembering where you put the pencil. And then you're like, oh God, time's gone. There, and.
It doesn't really matter on that version of Countdown, though. It's a whimsical.
I didn't get paid unless I kind of got enough points.
Really? Okay. Yeah. That's quite important.
Sad,
then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Anyways, Richard Whiteley.
Yeah, okay.
We bring the skull of Richard Whiteley. And then I think are you kind of bored of the Richard idea?
Nope.
Although you put it out there.
Want to see it through? We've got four, I think, so far.
Four, and then another Richard might be. Jesus. Go on. Richard the Third or the First? Which is the one? Now is the winter of our discontent. Which is is that the second? That's Richard the Third. I think is a play called Richard the Third. Ah, well then, yeah, that probably is him. Is the movie Nell about Nell? So I bring him just because I feel like it'd be nice to have someone you're definitely going to be more attractive that way than with a bit of no makeup on the island. And he has a big, like, Quasimodo hunchback, doesn't he?
Well, did he though? Like, I mean, that is a, you know...
Oh, he was the car park.
We're getting...
He got buried in cement like Jimmy Savile.
He did. Well, so it did... It did.
Yeah.
It turned out that he did have some issue with his back, didn't he? So it might have been a hunchback. There was a lot of speculation that the hump was drawn on.
Really?
Not like to him.
Yeah, I was like, every morning, like your eyebrows, just like, well, Richard, you have your USP.
That they made people him more evil than he was. Did he kill the princess in the tower? There's another Richard in there, I believe, if you want to take him with you. I might be wrong. Wasn't one of the princes in the tower Richard?
Really?
Wow, I don't know. Or was it Edward and something? There was two, weren't there? So, the Edward and the other.
Who's Edward's brother in the tower?
I'm pretty sure one of them was called
Richard. What an interesting Q&A we're doing with the audience. Yeah. Who was Edward's brother who got killed in the towers? The name of his brother's name.
Well, I'm going to Google it and tell them next week whether I'm right.
You can superimpose a voice on this. Like,
I can do whatever I want with this, to be honest. I can certainly put some laughter on it. On my bit sometimes.
And you'll also cut in me maybe saying, yes, I think minstrels should come back.
Okay, in a way, the Desert Island Dicks question is brilliant. No, I'm not going to ask you that one. Oh, this one, this is a good one. I've been meaning to ask this one more. Which celebrity would you like to stroke your hair as you die?
Oh... is it just like I've died of a natural death of old age and it's all
joyful?
Well,
it could be. It's just when you're dying, you might be, you know, something you might have been run over. And that's what I kind of imagine. You've been run over.
Change.
And, oh, God, my legs are going cold.
Yeah, and you'll never believe who ran over you. All of Little Mix.
But then
who
it'd be
would
nice
I like to
be going
stroke
out?
My hair? Who kind of seems kind of... David Attenborough.
Yeah.
Oh, can you imagine dying and having a... Here we go now. And the young female stand-up comedian, often found in bars and clubs making self-deprecating comedy about herself because she's in a male-dominated environment, is now slowly slipping away, and I am slowly stroking her hair. Oh, yeah, David Attenborough's voice. Yeah, I think would be...
Do you like
that
kind of... It's kind of impersonal, though, isn't he? Sort of talking to you as if you're not there. You don't want someone going, it's all right, Aisling, you know, step into the light. You want him to go, yeah, just narrating your death.
Yeah. I think I'd like that to get a vibe of what's going on.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, David Attenborough. Who would you choose?
I think I chose initially I chose Bouncer, didn't I, from Neighbours? I don't know why that was, so I'm going to have another think about it. I think I would like...
Who from Neighbours?
Bouncer, the dog from Neighbours. I don't know why that was the thing that just...
Stroking your hair?
Yeah, with its paw.
Oh.
I think I would like Gemma Chan to stroke my hair. Alive right. or dead.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Jack Whitehall's girlfriend, Gemma.
It is about Jack Whitehall's girlfriend. That came up actually in the podcast I did with him.
Yeah.
For some reason. all right. I'll do the Richard Dawkins one. Since we were talking about Richard Dawkins, this is from Tim Turner. He's actually asked a very good emergency question that is very enjoyable because it always gets a laugh halfway through. Richard Dawkins claims to have seen dogs doing a 69.
Yeah.
What's the worst lie you have ever told to impress people?
that I saw two cats doing a 69. What's the worst lie? I mean, this is again like when you put it on the spot for what lie
it
did
is
you
hard.
Tell?
You know, that's,
yeah, it is.
It's not meant to be easy, but then you know something will come up.
This is so again. Like I doubt even the Dublin people will know this. When I was at school, my nana grew up on the same island as this famous woman, Peg Sayers. Who was like a really famous Irish writer. She was this old Irish woman who used to speak about how tough life was on the islands and was just like really known for her sort of tales of hardship and sheep. And my nana's mother, so my great-grandmother, taught her on this island. There was only about 20 of them who lived on the island. But by the time I got to school, I kind of fandangoed the story that Peg Sayers, the famous novelist, was my great-grandmother. And I know people are like, whoa, celeb gossip, Aisling. It's really bad lie. But I lived with it for quite a long time. And I remember my like teacher looking at me with a sort of reverie, like, here we have the grandniece of Irish like literature. You know, like they just looked at me with such respect. I got caught in the lie and then couldn't really get out of it.
Your grandfather was a famous
writer. He's like this Peg Sayers is like, she's like the Kim Kardashian of the islands of Ireland. So it's like a really big deal. So that's like, whereas my granddad would be like, I don't know, like maybe Ozzy Osbourne in terms of reality TV, you know, and Irish literature, which you naturally make a comparison with. probably shouldn't have stayed out so late last night at the bowling alley.
It's good. We're both slightly hungover. It's good.
That's what lie I would... That's the biggest lie I've ever told.
When I was at school, I remember writing a story claiming that our house had been burgled, which it hadn't. Because you know you had to write what happened to you, and I said that the burglar had stolen my police uniform that I had. That was my favourite thing that I used to dress up at. And the teacher said, "Why did he steal that?" And I said, "The police think he may have had a son that he was." But it's like, what I liked is the teacher went along. I mean, must have gone, well, that didn't happen. This didn't happen. But I'm going to quiz him further to see what he comes up with. The idea of a burglar seeing a police uniform for his child rather than, like, the telly or, you know, I'm going to break you.
What age were you when you did that?
I was 28 years old. I was like five.
My friend Andrew, they got their house robbed. Yeah. At first, they were really annoyed. It was this house in Stoke Newington. They were so angry about it. They were like, oh my God, most of our things have been robbed. And then they started going around like what DVDs had been left. And they started feeling really judged by what ones the burglars had left behind. Like a Take That album and like the Notebook as a DVD and stuff like that. They were like, oh what? So a man's not allowed to cry anymore? Like...
I like a burglar who has time to make those kind of
decisions. Yeah, like you literally root through going, nah, I'm seeing it before, nah.
I'm not carrying out 10 extra DVDs that I don't need. That's extra weight.
Very odd decision by the burglar there.
He looked it up on Magpie to see how much he'd get for it. And that is not worth my time. We're coming very much to the end of this podcast, which is a shame because it's been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed it. You did a show in Edinburgh this year, 2015?
Yes, I did.
Was it Plan B?
It's called Plan B.
Yeah.
Science man loves that, don't you? Because you can see the what I did there. Yes, it's called Plan B.
And is that, are you touring with this or are you?
No, I don't think so, because I've got, as I say, I've got my script with Sharon and another few script things to write. So I'm kind of gigging and then making up new material. I'd also been, a lot of that show was from a lot of material from the last year.
Right.
So I might take it and do in little places around the country, but I won't tour it because I feel like I've done a lot of the material maybe in bits and bobs, so it'll be just writing new stuff now for the new year and bits.
Will there be another Edinburgh show coming up
or not this year because I want to get those other shows made, but the year after definitely. But I might write a show that maybe doesn't go to Edinburgh, that does, you know, kind of does London a little bit, and then rather than using Edinburgh, August kind of felt like a kind of arbitrary date to kind of get a whole thing done.
Well, I didn't do my new show Happy Now, which is touring.
Sounds great, Richard.
February to June 2016. I didn't go to Edinburgh. I did that. And it is it is actually very nice to be working on a show still.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like I had to get it ready by the 1st of August or whenever. And I'm still working on it, and I don't know, we'll carry on working on it as it goes. But yeah, it is quite interesting to free yourself up from
I mean, I love Edinburgh and what it teaches you, because you're doing roughly the exact same thing, like say 90% the same thing over and over again for a month. And you just learn a lot more about yourself and your craft and how to kind of deal with all, like, it's a learning thing, especially because, like I was saying, I haven't done stand up like a crazy amount of time, so you can never take back what you've learned, whether it goes well or badly. You can learn as much from some of the bad gigs and how you kind of, what you learned from and how to change around and stuff like that. But I think just this year probably won't happen this year. Edinburgh won't happen this year.
Then if all these TV things take off though, then you won't be able to go back.
I never have to see real people again. Living on castle. I'll never stop doing the live stuff, because that's what you get into it for. Like, that's the nicest bit.
Yeah, it's good, because I think there are a lot of people who don't feel that way, or a lot of people get, you know, do maybe feel that way, get sucked into doing the
I think you'd miss it, though. I don't know. I think it's because why I kind of started stand-up was I started doing kind of bits of acting on TV, and I really missed live theatre and being on a stage and like making a connection with an audience. And then to come back to stand-up, like, that's always what, like, I don't like the really bigger gigs. I know that might sound like someone who just like, well, no one's ringing you to ask you to do them, to be honest. But I like doing like stuff where you can kind of have a connection with an audience, because that just feels like something kind of tangible, rather than like when you're on telly, like, you know, your mother watches it, but it doesn't really feel real. It doesn't feel like work sometimes. And so the other thing feels like something creative.
Cool.
It's a bit more.
Well, that is very admirable and terrific. And I'm glad you feel that way, because I would like to see more of you doing stand-up. And we're going to have to end it there. Ladies and gentlemen, big round of applause for Ashley B. Fantastic. Thank you. We'll be back next week with another one. See you in a sec. You have been listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Ashley B. Thank you very much for listening. It was quite good. I hope you enjoyed it. The music is by Pest. Thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre. Thank you to everyone at Go Faster Strike. Thank you to everyone at the British Comedy Guide, which I think is just Mark and Aaron. Or Aaron. How do you say it? I don't know. Thank you also to my producer, Dave Cribb. This is a Fuzz, Go Faster Stripe and Sky Potato production. How do you enjoy those Sky Potatoes? I like them quite a lot. Thank you for asking. Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed this podcast, why not come and see me on tour? Go to richhang.com/happy_now/tour and you can find out all about my tour dates. I'm coming all around the UK between February and June 2016. And I think it might be my best show yet. I'll let you know after I've done it. And then we'll look back. It's always the one I'm doing that's my best show yet. But I think this one might be. Who knows? Anyway, I'll just tell your friends about this podcast. There's still lots more to come in this series, and we'll be back in June with Series 9. Gosh.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.